This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, UW campuses across the state are gearing up for the first day of classes this week. We'll talk to a reporter about how they're preparing after a challenging summer of budget cuts and faculty tension.
First, bargaining rights for subcontractor, franchise, and temporary employees could be significantly expanded after a decision by the National Labor Relations Board last week. The decision comes at a time when internet-based companies like Uber and Lyft are increasingly relying on independent contractors who don't have many of the labor protections that standard employees do.
The decision centered around whether or not a company that gets workers from outside contractors is a joint employer of those workers. The board said yes, but the debate is likely not over. Here with us now is Lydia DePillis, Washington Post reporter covering labor and business. Lydia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's start with the term joint employer. What does that mean in this case?
That means that a business has a role in co-determining the conditions of work, basically. So sometimes your work life isn't just determined by the company that signs your checks. Sometimes it's also the company that employs the company that signs your checks, right? So if a subcontractor is working on the site of a general contractor, then and they have a lot of rules, then that means they impact your day-to-day.
Now, can you do a little stage setting for us now? Tell us about the case that brought this issue in front of the National Labor Relations Board.
Sure. So this is a case that came up in 2013, and the Teamsters out in California were trying to organize a staffing agency called Lead Point, which was working for a recycling company called Browning Ferris. And they didn't just want to bargain with Lead Point because they felt like Browning Ferris actually did a lot of things like supervising their workers, determining the hours of work, determining discipline, effectively setting the price of work, which influences wages, having a role in who is hired and fired. And so they said, look, we want to bargain with Browning Ferris itself as well. And this is a concept that is not unknown in labor. It's certainly used in sometimes in unions and sometimes with other labor laws like that administer benefits. But under a previous standard, the joint employer would have to exert very direct control, not necessarily indirectly through a staffing agency. So a regional director disagreed with the Teamsters, but the board just last week went on appeal, decided to create a whole new standard and under which the recycling company does qualify as a joint employer with the staffing agency.
We're talking right now with reporter Lydia DePillis from the Washington Post talking about a National Labor Relations Board decision last week that looks like it's going to give expanded bargaining rights to subcontracted employees. Now, looking again at the National Labor Relations Board, can you tell us a little bit about who's on the board, their composition, and what they found then?
Yeah, so there are five people on the board, and they are, just like the Supreme Court, appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And there are currently three Democratic appointees and two Republicans. And this decision was interesting in that it was a party line vote. Three Democrats in favor of articulating a new standard that was more protective of workers, and the two Republicans strongly disagreeing with a very long dissent that took up more space than the opinion itself. And they raised all these potential implications of the new standard, which were hyperbolic probably, but certainly things that employers are very worried about.
Well, as I understand it, this decision overturned the status quo for quite a lot of years. What does the change signify in terms of the history of this law?
So what the board articulated is in some ways a return to what had been the case in the 60s and 70s until a couple cases in the 80s where the board said, no, a employer that's a master contractor or a user, as they call that kind of company, has to really exert very strong control for it to qualify as a joint employer. And so that change in the 80s helps give rise to a lot of really dissociated working relationships where trucking companies, for example, made a lot of their workers independent contractors or contracted with with companies to get goods in different places and taxis. So in some ways, the shift away from what the board returned to last week helped the economy transform into the kind of thing that the board said last week was too much of a change. It justified, we said we need to look at the act in a different way now.
So this has been a significant change. What were the arguments that the Democrats on the board made to advance this decision? And tell us a little bit then about what Republicans said in contrast.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, they were looking at the Democrats, the ways in which the workforce is evolving. And in particular, they focused on the growth of the contingent workforce, and that's people who work for staffing agencies or any kind of subcontracted firm, or even people who work for franchises, which are essentially independent businesses, but that are often controlled effectively by the corporate headquarters, like McDonald's. And they said, look, we need for workers to be able to influence the actual company that's determining their conditions of work. And because if you try to bargain with a company that has no control, it's going to be pretty useless. And now the Republicans didn't dispute that so much as tried to draw out the potential implications of the new standard, and they said it's going to be massively confusing if a worker is trying to bargain with eight different employers at once, because maybe they all have some level of control over their working conditions. And the main worry that employers have raised is that in order to avoid having liability for violations that their subcontractors might perpetrate, they will have to exert a much greater degree of control, which in a franchise context might mean that there's more corporate-owned stores and fewer of those small businesses that franchisees say they are. So that is the main concern we're hearing.
What has the International Franchise Association had to say about this decision?
I mean, they have been yelling at the top of their lungs for a year now, and to whoever will listen, mostly to Congress, but also publicly. And it's sort of a tricky thing to explain, right? Like, why is this a problem? Why does it necessarily lead to franchisors exerting more control rather than less control? It is possible for some general contractors to say, look, we don't want to be classified as a joint employer, so we're going to make sure that we don't influence the working conditions of the staffing agency's employees. And so they could tweak their contracts to make that happen. But the Franchise Association says the opposite will probably be true in a lot of cases, because those master companies need that control in order to make sure their jobs are done to their satisfaction. So they think it will lead to a transformation in the economy in the ways that they really dislike, which could be true.
And what about Congress? Is Congress getting involved in the debate?
Very much. Republicans especially have been extremely concerned about this potential decision, which the board's general counsel telegraphed essentially last year when he filed a brief in the case arguing for a change in the standard. And so they've known about it for a long time. And so Republicans have held hearings, they've sent letters, they have even included a budget rider in the budget, which, you know, won't really be passed because of how Congress works these days, but that would effectively prevent implementation of the new standard at all. That would block it. Now, they have a few other options. Certainly, the case will be appealed. They could also try repealing it through the Congressional Review Act, potentially. So there's some other avenues, but it will take a while for them to sort themselves out, and are not sure best at all.
Now, as you talked about earlier, this is maybe indicative of the changing workforce. What is the national trend in terms of how many people out there are employed by subcontractors right now?
So it's very difficult, actually, to pin this down. There have been a few studies, but government data collection hasn't really caught up to this trend. So a few things we do know. There are 2.87 million people employed through temporary staffing agencies. There's some work that suggests around 40% of the workforce is contingent in some way, and that encompasses a ton of different types of work, from part-time to temporary, right? So they have varying degrees of protection. But it is something that's been on the rise as more and more companies decide to focus on their core competency and outsource other functions, like cleaning their building or protecting the building with security guards.
And we'll be watching to see what happens next. Lydia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That was Washington Post reporter Lydia DePillis talking about a National Labor Relations Board decision last week that could give expanded bargaining rights to subcontracted employees.